Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Laura Reed. Laura is an international speaker, a public speaking coach, and best-selling author. Laura has jumped over numerous hurdles, including her own fear of public speaking, and has since been inspiring others to use their voices effectively. And today, Laura's going to share tips from her business, Speech Slayer, that help leaders and professionals deliver powerful speeches, and how we can use that to get veterans to get their stories out there. Before we get into all that, though, Laura, I wanted to welcome you to the show. I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's such an honor to be here today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking a little bit before we started recording here, and you know, for me, one of the big things is trying to help other veterans who have a story to tell get their stories out there and use it in a way that maybe can help other people, because sometimes, just telling your story for the sake of telling your story may not have the appeal that they want to drive them to go out of their way to tell their story. But on occasion, you might have a story that helps somebody else in whatever their journey is in their life, and you might be able to help them. That's kind of the goal here, is to help, you know, get some more folks out there telling their stories in one form or another. We've talked to, you know, folks who help people get their stories out there in a written form, in a book or something like that. But this, you are more, along the lines of public speaking and that type of thing, which is, you know, another medium. Some people may be more comfortable doing something like that. It may take some practice, and you might have to discover that about yourself, but that's kind of the goal here. So let's take it back a bit. Can you share a bit about your personal experience from someone who battled with a fear of public speaking, kind of like what I was just alluding to then becoming someone who's confident and inspiring other folks?
Absolutely. Yeah, you mentioned kind of writing our stories versus speaking our stories. And for me growing up, definitely writing was more my comfort zone. I've always loved doing that. And the main reason was, you know, there was a time in my life where speaking, even the simplest form of speaking, someone asking me what my name is, would be enough to incite a panic attack. I grew up with a severe stutter. And it was actually my name. I dreaded that question so much. For whatever reason, I had the hardest time just saying my name. And it's actually very common with people who stutter. If someone asks you a question and there's only one way to answer it, right? It's very difficult because, and you have these blocks come up. Usually if I have a little leeway in the words that I use, I could hide my stutter from people, which I still do to this day, even though I'm almost like 99% totally fluid. Every once in a while, you know, someone will ask me a question and I'll feel that block come up, and it just feels like this old, you know, like a monster that used to live in my throat. That's how I felt when I was a child, that it just lurked there in my throat. And when I would try to speak, it would just wake up and eat my words. And, you know, even though I went through years of speech therapy to be able to speak, you know, quite fluidly, the shame, the humiliation, the fear was just like baked into my nervous system, it felt like. So even into my adult years, it still lingered there. And it wasn't until about 15 years ago now, I was in a staff training for a job I had at the time teaching. And we're just going around the room, you know, introducing ourselves. That word, introductions, if I saw that on an agenda, even 15 years ago, it still incited that panic in me. And as I got closer and closer to my turn to speak, and everyone else just seemed, it was no-brainer, so easy introducing themselves, I started just having these symptoms like nausea. The room got dizzy. I thought I was going to be sick. And I got up and I left the room, went to the bathroom, and I was having a full-blown panic attack. And I ended up going home sick that day, sick, but really ashamed. And I knew that day something had to change. Because the thing is, when we live in some type of fear, it's exhausting. You know, and if it's a daily fear and you're just waking up with that, it takes such a toll on you physically and mentally. And I happened to be shortly after that walking downtown, and I saw this flyer. You know, I look for signs in my life. Sometimes it's a literal sign that I need to make a change. It was a flyer for a storytelling competition. And it's like every cell in my body was like, you are entering that competition. And I found this really unlikely place of refuge by, for the first time in my life, running towards my fear instead of hiding it, running away from it. And I found myself on a stage telling my story. And instead of being terrified, I was exhilarated. And more than that, I realized afterwards that my story, like you mentioned, like could help others. So other people were then inspired to get on the stage, share their story. And eventually I realized, you know, I've spent most of my life like researching how to overcome speaking fear. And I've lived these strategies that some of them I've just come up with on my own. And I felt this obligation then to eventually start my own business helping others. And myself, you know, I became a speaker as well because of that feeling, like there's nothing like it. Yes, we can write and that can be really powerful too. But being on a stage, like sharing your story, knowing that your message can help other people and change their lives, to me, there's nothing more empowering than that. And I never want to stop doing that.
Yeah, and that's great because, like you said, there's so many people out there who have a story that can be impactful on somebody else's life. And sharing that knowledge and information that you've accumulated throughout the trials and tribulations maybe of your life, that is a great way to help bring other people on board out of that struggle area, you know, where they're trying to just barely keep their head above water. And you've already figured out how to get into the boat, and you're not worried about keeping your head above water anymore. And if you're already there, why wouldn't you want to help bring some people on board? Right. So, you know, we were talking earlier as well about veterans who have experienced significant events in their lives, largely through their military service. But a lot of times they find it difficult to articulate those stories, to put them out there. And maybe they don't necessarily know how that story or how that event that they experienced can help somebody else, or whether or not they even care to get out there and share their story. What advice do you have for them, and how does your company, Speech Slayer, help these people overcome fears, kind of like what you were describing? And I actually want to, this is kind of a side note, how did you overcome the stutter and that type of fear, you know, and help folks overcome these things and eventually be able to communicate these experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, what I would say is sometimes our stories, you know, it's like we've hidden them away if they're a dark story that caused us some trauma or some pain or some fear in our lives. And I'm sure veterans can relate to that. And we don't want to go there. You know, we don't think it's going to help anyone, especially ourselves. We don't want to relive it. And I had a writing instructor tell me once when there was a story I'd wanted to share, but it was really dark and I wanted to write about it. And I said, you know, I don't really want to go there. And he said, I'll never forget it. I have this written down for the longest time. There is exactly where you need to go. You know, because sometimes those darker stories that we've tucked away are the ones that really might most help someone else. Right. And we see our vulnerability with those stories as maybe a weakness, but really it's so much our strength to, you know, get to empower those stories. And the thing that can happen with us personally is it can be very healing and very cathartic mm-hmm. because we tend to be focused more on ourselves with our stories. And we think, you know, no one really wants to hear my story. I don't want to relive this story. I'm just going to keep it kind of hidden. And we're thinking about ourselves. But really, when we bring those stories up and illuminate them, you know, they cast light over not just ourselves, but others that are listening. And it's that light that can also be healing to others in that same way that it is to ourselves. So, you know, one thing with speaking to overcome your fear is to think about the audience, you know, think about the message that your story holds that could change someone else's life. And I think when we take that spotlight off of ourselves and shine it on others, that ideal audience for us, you know, whether it's just in a very small group or you want to be up on a stage, you know, we're all public speakers in one way or another. We can't really avoid it. Trust me, I tried for a long time. but there are, you know, we're going to be asked to speak in some way. And, you know, making that rewarding for other people is just a game changer. As far as me overcoming my own stutter, again, it was, you know, many years of speech therapy. I learned a lot of strategies, just listening to my voice back, you know, recording it, speaking like I'm kind of singing with a slow onset. And some of those strategies actually do help me today as far as just slowing down, knowing that I can have a pause. In fact, pausing is a very underused speaking technique that can really add a lot of good drama to our stories. You know, sometimes when I would have an overly dramatic pause because I was just forgetting what I was going to say, or I would have a bit of a speaking block, I would be horrified. But afterwards, people would say, oh, I didn't even notice. Oh, you know, that pause, I added a lot of drama. So that can be really good.
You know? Right. And you know, I've done hundreds of these episodes, interviews with folks like you. And every once in a while, I just have this thought that it's like, I wanted to bring up this topic. And then the guest is continuing to talk about whatever it is that they were talking about. And then, you know, a minute or two goes by and then I'm like, okay, now it's my time to bring up this topic that is bleh. I don't know. I forgot all about it. And so now then I'm pausing and I'm thinking, what is that thing that I wanted to say? I'm feeling like such an idiot. And then I go back and I listen to it. I was like, oh, that was like 2 seconds of me pausing. To me, in the moment, it felt like an eternity. It does. But it was really just like 2 seconds to think about it. And nobody listening to the episode is going to be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he forgot what he was going to say. You know, like yeah. It was just me being hard on myself in that moment, right? And so it... To your point, it's not that big of a deal. And it's probably in some cases, it's a good thing to have a little pause to add a little drama to what it is that you're saying. And, you know, it could be helpful to some extent.
And you brought up something else, that like we can be so highly critical of ourselves, right?
That's right?
And we're focused after we do some kind of speaking thing or podcast, whatever it is. We're like, oh, I messed that thing up, that one thing out of this whole thing. And we're not focused on everything that went really right. And the thing is, when we do make mistakes, like we are human. And I think if you come off too polished, like too memorized, you know, memorizing every word, it's not going to be as authentic. And a lot of times it's better to even have, you know, a couple mistakes in there, acknowledge it, laugh it off, whatever it is. That can be totally fine too. And our mistakes are never noticed as much as, you know, from others as much as we notice them.
Yeah, we can be our own worst critic at times, you know. For the veterans who are out there, and maybe I'll extend this to the entire military community, the military families, the you know, currently serving service members who want to get a story out there. We were talking before we started recording about a special operations person who you've had, you know, the pleasure of working with, who had many stories, and figuring out how to zero in on one or two particular stories that resonate with whoever that audience is that they're looking to speak with is a challenge sometimes, because sometimes the folks who have gone on many deployments and countless missions and all these things that they've learned lessons from along the way, it's like, how do I pick just one? It's like drinking from a fire hose. It's just too much information coming at you. What advice do you have for folks who maybe have many topics that they can talk about, but just don't know where to start?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's not a bad problem to have, having too many good stories to tell. But sure. At the same time, I think it's looking at the audience again, you know, looking at that specific audience that you've been asked to speak to, or that you ideally want to speak to. Think about, you know, what are their villains? You know, I put it in storytelling terms here. You know, what are their challenges, their dragons they want to slay, you know, whatever it is, their hardships. And then thinking about a story that can relate to that, you know, specifically, because having our stories be relatable to whatever the audience is we're speaking to is so crucial for them to be engaged with it and be connected and get those true takeaways from it. Sometimes if you're asked to speak at a conference, there's a theme, you know, or you know, something going on in the world, or, you know, something that is going to be like the overarching kind of topic that you can hone in then on a story that really relates to that, and that can work really well too. But again, you know, sticking to maybe one story that relates to a theme, and then coming up with, what is my main message now that this audience is going to really relate to, and that also is, you know, overlaps with my story a bit. And then you can kind of repeat that message, kind of weave it through. You know, we're so familiar with what we want to say, but I think keeping in mind that an audience often isn't, and that it's okay to kind of repeat a message and maybe have some anecdotes in there to share as well, so they get that one main takeaway from it. Sure. Right. And, you know, a lot of times we just want to pack in our whole time. If we're given 45 minutes to speak, we're going to pack in every second and rush through it because we just have so much we want to share. And that really can be counterproductive, right? Building in those pauses, having some audience interaction. One of my main tips that I love to share is that when you are asked to speak, don't think about it as a presentation. Think about it as a conversation. Right. And what do we do to make an engaging conversation? We ask questions. We have pauses. We share stories. We tell jokes. You know, those are ways to really level up your presentation.
You know, I'm thinking about, you mentioned presentation, and immediately my mind went to Death by PowerPoint. And
that's one of my chapters, I think, Death by PowerPoint in my book.
I do want to talk about the book in just a second here, but that was the first thing that came to my mind, is just Death by PowerPoint. And I remember all the briefings that we would be in when I was in the Army, and it would just be sitting there, and it'd be slide after slide after slide filled with text as if it was a Word document. And it's like, you're sitting there and you're reading it, and it's like, the person who's presenting is just turning into Charlie Brown's mother with the wah, wah, wah kind of voice. And you're not even paying attention to the person anymore. So I like how you're saying, keep it conversational, ask the questions, have the pauses, and engage with the audience a bit, because that's how they'll remember you, as opposed to the boring slides that you have on the screen, right? The slides should almost, like, if you even have them, they should sort of just augment the speech that you have, kind of, you know, one or two words, you know, maybe on a slide, and, you know, maybe some graphics that highlight what it is that you're talking about, but it doesn't have to be the focal point. It, you know, maybe if you think about it this way, if the power went out and you had a strong enough voice, could you still give the presentation? Would you still be able to do this and do it effectively? And I think that's maybe where you want to be with the type of speech that you're deciding to give. And when you make it relatable, when you have these stories that you tell, instead of just wrote, like, this is how you're supposed to do things and blah, 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 blah. But you say, hey, this is why, You're supposed to do things maybe this way. And this is what I'm trying to teach you. And here's the lesson that I learned when I did things the other way, and, you know, whatever. And you kind of make it more relatable to people. I think that's a great way to go about it. You know, kind of like what you were just talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, we've all been there, the death by PowerPoint. It's just excruciating. Yeah. And, you know, for clients I've worked with that have come to me with a presentation and it's like that, I see the slides. I'm like, oh no, you know, and it's lots of text and not a lot of graphics or anything. It's basically their whole speech. It's everything they're going to say on a slide. The reason that I think most people do that is it's a crutch. You know, it helps them, right? Because they know what's coming next. They can read, you know, but as far as the audience goes, I don't know about you, but what I usually am thinking when I see a presentation like that is I can read these slides faster than you can speak them. And this could have been an email. Like, why are you even presenting? So I think it's acknowledging, you know, every time we have the opportunity, that's really what it is, like the opportunity to be asked to speak and present in front of people. You know, it's such a great opportunity to be able to share our voice, to engage, to make people laugh, maybe make them cry, you know, teach them something really valuable and meaningful to them. And, you know, these PowerPoint slides can really take away from that. And so you just have to get a little uncomfortable with it, I think, and know that you really don't have to rely on them. They should just be enhancing what you're saying if needed at all. And, you know, give yourself a little credit for how well you actually could probably work off an outline. You know, right. and instead of memorizing word for word or having that crutch, you know, really trust in your own voice and your story and your message. It doesn't have to go exactly as planned. No one's going to know. I've had plenty of times where I've kind of blanked out. I've had to circle back around and it was probably even better than what I planned, you know.
Sure.
So you got to kind of let yourself off the hook. And please, for those listening, like, ditch most of those PowerPoint slides. Just, you know, make them engaging. You can make them funny. You know, it's a tool, right, that is supposed to make our presentations better, right, not worse.
Yeah, there was a conference I went to years ago, and one of the speakers, unfortunately, I forget the topic that he was talking about now, but that's not important. During the conference, though, his slides, he was an artist as well as he worked in technology, and his topic was about technology. But his slides were basically just him doing a line art, like one line that made an entire picture, and each slide as it progressed was just a little more added to it throughout the thing. And it had to do with the topic that he was talking about. And at the very end, it kind of revealed the complete picture of what it was that he was talking about. And so it was just a different way. There's no words on the slides other than like the title slide. And, you know, at the end he had his contact information, but there were no words throughout the whole presentation. It was really just building up to the end. And so it kind of augmented it. And it was kind of a neat way to have that. And he was a good speaker as well. He didn't
need to read off of it. And it says a lot. You remember that in such detail. Right. You remember that.
Yeah.
So,
And it was it was black and white. You know, he used like just a pen on a white piece of paper. And that's how he made this one line drawing kind of thing. It was cool. Really neat. So you mentioned a little bit about your book earlier and your book. I can see it in the background for the folks who are watching the video. It's in the background there. The Public Speaking Horror Show, 7 Secrets to Kill It as a Speaker. Tell us about the book and how the audience can benefit from the insights inside.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I've been writing this book in some ways my whole life. You know, something a lot of people don't know about me is I love horror movies, and I grew up in what I believe was a haunted house in upstate New York. And I've always was fascinated with ghosts and ghost stories and, you know, storytelling in general. And my first story I ever wrote, my mom typed it up on her typewriter and I was 5 and it felt like it'd been published. It was called The Ghost Day. It was this ghost story. So in some ways, you know, the book is like kind of this love letter to my past, like weaving in some of that the motif of fear, which we use so much with speaking and, you know, saying we'd rather die and we have stage fright, all those things, weaving that through with stories as well. And I also love humor. You know, I occasionally do stand-up comedy. And so I believe that this topic, as fearful as it can be to us, can also be really amusing. You know, so I've tried to weave in a lot of humor in the book as well, but also it's a workbook. I have activities in there that you can just write right in the book with your Sharpie, whatever you want, and really get in touch with, you know, what really are my fears when it comes to speaking. And then I have a lot of practical, you know, actionable steps that you can take that I've taken myself. Many you're not going to see anywhere else. Again, I just live these. And so they're kind of invented by me that have really helped a lot of people, which makes me so happy.
That's great. And just, I wanted to kind of circle back about having the slides and the PowerPoint and that type of thing as a crutch. One thing that I recognized when I was doing public speaking, this was years ago, I was doing at various conferences, I was going to doing a lot of speeches. You never knew what you're going to get as far as the technology until like the day of. You didn't know where the speaker notes going to be available to you on a screen in front of you, or was it just going to be the slide showing up behind you? And you know, were you going to have a podium to be able to put notes or like a paper or anything like that on? You really never knew. It was a crapshoot every single time. Even if they said, hey, we're going to have this available, you show up and, oh, oops, we don't have it, you know? And so every once in a while, these things happen. And if you're not prepared, like you said, like focusing on the outline versus the reading verbatim off of a slide or whatever, then you come off more unprepared. And so it's like better to prepare for having nothing and no technology, no podium that you could put notes on or anything like that. Store it all up. One of my coworkers used to call it, store it up in the B drive, up in the brain. And then, you know, unless you get hit in the head, you're not going to be able to forget all this stuff. Right. So I think that to me seems like a much better approach to this, right?
Yeah, and then you're going to be so much more comfortable going into it too, knowing that you got this no matter what. And some right. of the best presentations and speeches I've ever seen were completely unplugged. You know, it reminds me of like American Idol when, you know, there's always a big band sometimes in the back supporting the singer, but every once in a while there'd be someone that would come out and just do totally acoustic version of some song. And to me, those were always the most powerful. And the same can be for speaking. You know, you can come out and just, if everyone else has all these slides, you come out and do something different or just have a couple photos. And it's just like this, you know, this really kind of interactive storytelling with your message and you're comfortable. However we show up, that energy we're showing up with is reflected with the audience, you know, and infused into how they're feeling too. So if we're thrown off suddenly and it's evident that we are like really shooken up because the tech isn't working or we don't get the podium or we lost our notes or whatever it is, you know, the audience is kind of uncomfortable too, and we never want that. So what I say is don't memorize, but internalize what the story is. If you're visual, you can make kind of a storyboard of your presentation. And so you know in your mind what is coming next, right?
That's right.
And you don't have to know every word, because also when you kind of over-prepare to a point where it's just memorized word for word, if you do happen to forget that one next word, it might throw off your entire thing. You're going to forget everything after that, right? I've definitely had that happen to me. It's not fun. But if you just know the stories, what's coming next and the messages coming next, topic that I'm going to talk on next, you're not going to have that.
Right, exactly. A great example of that is when you have a telemarketer call you and you interrupt them mid-speech or mid-script or whatever, and they have to say something else. And where was I? I don't know what to say next. Oh my gosh. And I don't know. I don't like getting those calls anyway. So I kind of find it humorous when I kind of throw them off a little bit.
Yeah.
But when I was in college, just a kind of quick story about what you're just talking about. You know, when I was in college, there's a class I had to do a presentation on a particular accounting software. I had an accounting degree, and we had to present like how to use this accounting software, and we could pick from any accounting software that we wanted to. And I had a business kind of on the side at the time that I used a particular accounting software, so I already knew how to use it, and I used it almost daily, and I was pretty well versed in how to use it. And so someone could just ask me a question about anything, and I'd be like, okay, this is just how you do it. And I could answer it rather quickly, the same way I'm having a conversation with anybody else. So I don't want to say I was an expert at it. I'm sure there's some nuances, but I knew how to use the day-to-day stuff on it. And so the presentation that I gave, I had no notes, I had no script, I had no outline or anything like that. It was all in my head. And I'd look at the screen as kind of a prompt as, what is it that I was talking about next? Okay. Oh yeah, that's right. This next part of it. Other people were getting up in front of the class, and it was like, they were just so nervous and everything. And it's like, it was such an easy thing for me because it was just like, I was talking about the thing that I do every day. And so to your point, when you internalize it and it's just something that is, it kind of flows a little bit more naturally, then I think it's going to just be a much better speech at that point, right?
Absolutely. Just making it conversational. And that's why storytelling is so great to use, because no matter what our topic is, we know our stories, right? We have that already internalized, kind of etched into our hearts, right? We have it. And so knowing that is part of whatever you're presenting on is going to give you a certain comfort level through it, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, speaking of comfort, you know, most people say we need to break out of our comfort zones to do things like speaking if we're scared of that, right? You see it all the time, but I disagree. I say, get in touch with how you feel when you're in your comfort zone. Because usually it's pretty awesome. Like you feel, you know, so relaxed, at ease, peaceful, like your authentic self. You could recite anything, right? So why do you want to get out of that? So what I say instead is just expand that feeling out, right, to encompass the scary things you're doing. So for example, with my own experience, this is one of those things I kind of just came up with on my own, and a lot of people would disagree that, you know, we should always break out of our comfort zone. But when I stop telling myself, you know, I have to do this, I'm doing this really scary thing, I'm going to be so confident, I'm going to fake it till I make it, all of that. And instead was just, you know what, I'm just going to be myself. I'm going to just infuse this with how I feel when I'm in my comfort zone. Instead of being confident, I'm going to be calm and conversational, just myself. It was such a game changer. And then the science I discovered behind it was so cool, because when we tell ourselves we're doing a scary thing, our brains go into this nervous brain mode, right? And guess what? We forget our words when we're in that mode. All the symptoms come up, our dry mouths, our nervousness, everything we don't want when we're speaking, right? That's why we forget. And then when our brains are in that relaxed mode that we're in, when we're just on our couch speaking to a friend, we can remember anything. And we're not thinking about what we're going to say, right? We're just saying it, and we're naturally at ease. So that's one of my biggest tips is get in touch with that comfort zone and stay there while you're speaking.
Yeah. So as you're bringing that up, it makes me think of the combat veterans who have trained hours and hours and hours on how to participate in different combat missions and do the different things that they do to be successful out in combat, which I don't, you know, that's got to be one of the scariest things that any person could do, going into a place where, you know, people are going to start shooting at you. And like that's pretty darn scary, right? And they're able to go out and do it regardless of the fact that it's scary. They just go out and do it because, well, that's the mission and that's their job and they have to, and that's what is expected of them. And, you know, if people can wrap their head around that, you know, they've gotten the training, right? We're not asking anybody to just, you know, here's your rifle for the very first time you've ever seen it and you've never handled it before. You've never done anything with any other teammates or anything like that. Go assault that village and go, you know, capture the objective or, you know, whatever. We're not asking people to just do it for the first time, right? It takes practice, and you go through rehearsals, and in the military we call it the crawl, walk, run phase, where we start off in the crawling, basically doing things slow, having people there to kind of help you, and then walk, you kind of pick it up a little bit, and then run, you're on your own, and you're able to take this concept, whatever it is, and you run with it. I gotta imagine with public speaking of any sort, in the very beginning, if this is not something you've done before, it's going to be pretty uncomfortable. But the more you do it, the better you get, the more you tell the story, the better you get at it. And so, one thing I did, before going, I did some television interviews the night before. I was in front of the mirror in my bathroom, just rehearsing what it was that I wanted to say over and over and over and over. And the reason why I did in the mirror was so I could see what I look like. If I'm constantly doing this with my hands and it's really distracting to the viewer, I would know, okay, well, I probably shouldn't do that because I could see it, but it just helped me get a lot more comfortable. And when I actually came to call it game day, I was super comfortable with it. So, I think the point is practice it and practice till it, that becomes your comfort zone, And so, maybe it's not stepping outside of the comfort zone, because when you're outside of that, you're uncomfortable, but get comfortable with the uncomfortable things, and then you'll be in a better position. I think that's kind of along the lines of what you're trying to say, right?
Absolutely. And it's so normal to be fearful of it. It's one of our biggest human fears, right? And, oftentimes it's not like we can do really scary things in our life. I recently worked with someone who was a volunteer firefighter, and he ran into burning buildings, no fear. And he was scared to death of doing job interviews to try to get hired full time with a fire department. So he, we worked together. He actually just got hired a couple of months ago. And, it's a very, very competitive field to get into. But a lot of that was him getting comfortable practicing, because it is a skill, just like anything else. And the more that you practice it, the better you're going to get. And when you haven't done anything, like the first time, let's say you put on ice skates and someone pushes you out in the arena that way, it's terrifying, right?
Sure.
But it is. It's a skill that can be built up, absolutely, and you keep improving. I learn every time I do, I do speaking. I've been doing it for a long time now. I make mistakes every time. I still beat myself up a little over something in the middle of the night. I'm like, oh yeah, that's what I wanted to say. But watching yourself back, recording yourself, as uncomfortable as that can be, you can learn so much. And just being a little easier on ourselves, knowing that like we're doing our best, we can do hard things, we can learn things, and, speaking to ourselves, even our inner critic, being able to speak to ourselves with kinder words like we would a loved one. I hear a lot of my clients saying, like, I hate the sound of my voice. I sound so stupid. I can't do this. I'm like, would you speak to your loved one that way? Your child, so starting to just be nicer to ourselves, lighten up a little bit. And like you mentioned too, when you're getting out on stage, like, no one's going to die, right? You're just giving a speech. So sometimes I'll tell myself that, like, settle down, inner critic. I'm just doing this podcast. It's going to be okay.
Right. To your point, nobody's going to die. It's nothing that you say getting up on that stage is going to be, detrimental to anybody in that kind of way. So, get up there, have fun with it, prepare. Obviously, you don't want to have fun the way you might go, have fun with a pickup basketball game where it's like, who cares if I'm good or not? It's just, I'm going out to have fun. Yes, you want to be prepared. You want to practice, rehearse, and things like that. But knowing that you're going out there, that I'm going out to have some fun, and I'm going to have a conversation with those folks and hopefully help some people out along the way. To that point, I know there are stories that people have, military or not, doesn't matter. People have stories that can impact some change on, the audience, their families, their people in their social circles. you know, what have you seen as far as other people getting out there, telling their stories and impacting some sort of change in the audience that they've spoken to?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the thing is, and I have seen stories for, or heard stories for sure, that, you know, just stayed with me. Mm-hmm. And many times it's because, you know, there was some kind of emotional connection with it. And again, it's usually when I'm already in that venue where I know, like, whoever the speaker is, they're it's going to hopefully be relatable to why I'm there. So, for example, at a women's leadership empowerment conference, you know, there was a speaker there who told a story mostly about self-love, but about, you know, kind of finding herself, overcoming what was going to be a fatal diagnosis, and that kind of setting her on this this journey. And it was, you know, everyone there, you know, when there's that those moments in certain people's speeches. And that's what I strive for, you know, to help my own clients. Like, instead of, you know, just focusing on, you know, instead of just the whole, like, these are the topics, this is what I'm going to deliver, like, create these moments where you can hear a pin drop and people just, there's suspense. Like, they can't wait to hear how you overcame this obstacle. You know, those are those moments I've heard in other people's talks where it's just gripping and it's unforgettable. And then guess what? Like, everyone wants to talk to that person or buy their book or whatever it is, right? You know, leaving them wanting more sometimes can be really great too. But telling that story in a way that creates a moment of connection. You know, Maya Angelou said, people will forget what you said. They will forget what you did, but they will never forget how you made them feel. And that's what those moments and stories can do.
Absolutely. You know, I know there are some people out there who have stories. They definitely are out there, and they're probably listening to this right now, and they probably want to figure out the best way that they can get their story out there. You know, how they can get on stage and how they can start doing these types of speeches. Where can people go to get involved with your company, Speech Slayer, and find out, you know, the programs that you have to offer and the ways that you can help them get started on the journey of public speaking?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I work mostly one-on-one with my clients. And the best way is if you go to my website, which is thespeechslayer.com. You can sign right up for a free 20-minute like talk story consult with me. We can see if it's aligned for me to help you, you know, reach your speaking goals. So that's an easy way. I also have a free mini course on my website, which is called The 7 Deadly Sins of Public Speaking. So if you want, it's really short and easy, and you can find out the things you shouldn't do, because a lot of times we're just focused on what we should do, although we did mention death by PowerPoint, which is probably one of those sins, I'm pretty sure. And then my book, in my book, which you can get on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com, I do have some simple frameworks in there for making storytelling, just kind of demystifying it, making it really simple for you. So that can also be a great place to start, to just get some of those basic tools that can keep helping you as well. You can also just email me at laura@thespeechslayer.com, and I'd love to hear from you.
Excellent. Well, I will have links to your book, to your website, and all that in the show notes so that folks can find out more information for themselves, and they can maybe take that that quick you know, what not to do test, and you know, hopefully they can find the information resources that they are looking for and get on stage and or in front of an audience of some sort and be able to tell their story. It may not be the easiest thing to do, but like you said, you know, it's all about getting comfortable with that and trying to you know, embrace that comfort and figure out how to make that as comfortable as possible. And I'm sure you can help out quite a few people. So
thank you.
Laura, thank you very much for taking the time to come on. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This has been really awesome. I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.